Thanks so much for the introduction. Thanks so much for the opportunity to be here. I participated in a boardroom lunch with Celia earlier this year, and I found it really interesting from my perspective. Being chief executive of an international non-government organisation that's focusing on aid. I would like to acknowledge here the Turrbal people and the Jagera people, and the traditional owners of the land, which today is specifically the North Coast and Crescent. I also congratulate the team on the production for the report. I think it's really timely, and it's amazing, isn't it, how the launch of this report finally lined up the Prime Minister to make significant comments on further aid into the region, and how they've lined up the Prime Minister to be the next China. So we really want to get your public engagement and engagement now, obviously, backing what they do. So I really want to give you a perspective from where we see our neighbourhood working with partners in many of the countries that certainly in the Pacific and in the Indo-China region. And just to kind of give you the snapshot, Oxfam is an international aid organisation. We're part of a global organisation, so we have a presence in 90 countries across the world. And we really have, I guess, three pillars to our work. We are very involved in humanitarian response, and that varies from the climate events to the sad conflict events. And so, in many of the countries across the world, including places like Syria, and certainly coming to the human response in Bangladesh, we have long and enduring relationships in terms of long-term development in many countries. And our preferred model of operation is working with partners rather than delivering services to those countries. But we also believe that if you want to get sustainable change, that you actually have to look at what are the systemic issues that have to be addressed. And so we see ourselves as trying to tackle the systemic issues at a global level, at a local level, and trying to advocate for solutions in cooperation with the countries that we work in. And the thing that we think is very important is that we work with communities rather than doing things for them. And to that end, Caitlin, I really want to commend you for the observation that the second state of the nation report will actually be done with the Pacific. Which is quite right. We need to kind of move away from our sense of being the colonial saviors to actually thinking about where are the partnerships and the commonalities and where there are so many important perspectives that come from the Pacific partners from one or the other. So I think we're all approaching this issue looking at, you know, what are the key kind of drivers and for what our contribution, whether it's civil society, whether we're a company, whether we're a government, in terms of what the relationship with the Pacific would be. And from Oxfam's perspective, there are really important things that we think are really pretty big challenges that need an integrated response. So the first is the inequality gap. And CEDA did something on inequality, having almost to reduce the report. But basically, the gap between the rich and the poor in our region and across the world is actually making the challenge of people who live in poverty much harder to tackle. And so it's kind of a problem analysis that actually saying, let's be clear that there is a gap in terms of a growing gap between riches and the poor. There's a concentration gap. And that's not going to be solved by having time. That's going to be solved by other responses that are around taxation, around global reform, around things to do with money laundering and so on. The second really big challenge we think is around just the, what we would see as the closing civil society space. And that's really critical in the Pacific because ultimately, if there is any sustainable change in the future, then the voices of all parts of the system have to be heard. And if voices of civil society are locked down, then there's a really important perspective that's not being heard. Globally, we're all really concerned about the massive displacement of people, and we've heard the figure see, I want to start with one that, from our perspective, is really we've worked with the retail industry in Australia to look at not only the standards of garment workers who live below the poverty line, particularly in Bangladesh, but also to try to work towards actually Australian companies demanding that their contractors pay a fair wage to these garment workers. We were really pleased that we were able to work with Georgia Pacific Economics, a very credible economic consulting firm, to look at what it would actually cost if you added to the value of the production of a T-shirt in Australia, if you added to guarantee the flow-on effects to garment workers in something like Bangladesh. And the economic model is actually scaling. So if you look at a $10 T-shirt, about 40 cents of that goes towards the wages of workers. And if you actually wanted to pass on the cost of the garment to get a living wage, then it really only adds another 10 cents to the cost of the garment. And the reason we did that model was to actually demonstrate that the private sector with very little impact on its actual bottom line in terms of margins and costs can really look at the ethical sourcing where it's working in countries where it can be rather than in quality, and where there are benefits that are coming back to Australia, so that the garment industry in Australia is a 20% endeavour industry, but where it's possible to actually ensure supply chains are really important. So that's one great opportunity that we see. And I think the private sector increasingly is looking for opportunities to actually understand the impact of actually meeting their share of this requirements whilst they're working in these countries in the region. I also talked about inequality being one of the challenges, and I think that this is now being recognised not only by SEFA but by the IMF and by the Pope and by various other international bodies as a really critical mentioned a bit about civil society, and obviously that's important in the Australian context, and actually it's a pretty challenging environment in Australia at the moment in terms of the role of civil society, because there are various pieces of regulation around foreign donations from the charity sector has been called up, around foreign operatives from the charity sector has been called up, and we should be accountable. We raise money from the generosity of the Australian community, we want to be accountable. We also want to be able to operate in a level playing field. But in some of the countries that we're operating in, we see that the voices of organisations that are part of civil society are really being dampened down. And it means that the avenue to actually tap into the sentiment of the community is lost, that what we have is the filter of a government doing a business plan without the real experience of people being put into what the consideration is. And we think that's dangerous. We've heard it really impacting the state of our neighbourhood report. We can think about economic nationalism, lack of confidence in institutions to address the kind of concerns that people could do day-to-day lives are facing. The most recent that I think is related to my own organization and my own acceptance of protecting the fact that I think that the women that are going to fulfill the rest of the time are confident in institutions to give them solutions, and those movements will come in one second and response to them. Now, I do want to just kind of finish with a couple of comments about the way it's going on. And it won't come as a surprise to me that the guys have been very disappointed by the successive cost to the aid budget. It is worth noting just a couple of statistics for when we have your democratic conversations, and then people say, why are we funding it to the Pacific? Why are we funding the drought-stricken farmers? And, you know, those kind of conversations that we have. But less than 1% of government expenditure is actually spent on overseas aid. There's all sorts of other assistance that comes to countries overseas, but the actual proportion of overseas aid that's spent is a very small part of overall government expenditure. And as we hear, I think, from Denise's presentation, I guess I can assure you that it's a proportion of the aid budget that organisations like ours take. A dollar makes an enormous difference. Used effectively, then you can see it's used to actually try to address this issue of poverty and recreation. And then it spirals into all of those other interesting discussions about is it in our interest to make sure that people are living in poverty and recreation, and is it being used to actually bolster the kind of capacity, build the capacity with countries, and so that they can become sustainable in their own right, and is it possible that the good living sustainability in those countries and people feeling that they can determine the direction for themselves. So, certainly today's announcement by the Prime Minister is welcome. We can still have to have an increased attention on indigenous cities. We're never going to outspend time on infrastructure, so I think Australia has to be incredibly about how it uses its aid in the Pacific region and how we build up the relationships with our Pacific partners. But we are concerned that what happens is that an ever diminishing pool of money that's used for Australian needs is reshuffled rather than expanded, which is what we would like to see happen, where we can get to some sort of respectable level in terms of what Australia's contribution is and what sort of rich countries, not only to the region, but to some of the troubled spots in the world. I mentioned in our table, I just come back from Lebanon. Lebanon has a population of 4 million people. In addition to that, 4 million people, there are 2 million refugees. Now, imagine that proportion of Muslim in our country, we have a big problem with that. Australia now goes to help in some of those refugee programs, but we're still a partner, but an important partner. And we shouldn't lose sight of the fact that we've got a role to play in some of those conflicts as well. So, to finish on a positive note, there have been enormous gains that have been made. We've cut global poverty in half in the last 10 years. We've doubled the number of people who've had access to clean water, and we've dramatically reduced the number of children dying in the year. But there's a really big job to be done, and I guess increasingly from where I sit and looking out into the world, I think that's a job for all players. It shouldn't be left just to governments in terms of overseas aid. It should certainly be encouraged for governments to play an integrated role, as we've heard about today, that it's not just the delivery of aid, it's about the development of economic relationships and building capacity in the areas of governments and civil society. And ideally, it should be about Australia playing a strong role in leadership on a global stage in terms of the protection of human rights and the communities that we work in. And the private sector, I think, increasingly has had a very positive contribution to finding this space. And the more that we can find ways to find the areas of agreement and commonality of time together, I think the more likely that we are to see some improvements in the quality of life for many of our neighbours who are such a short distance away. So that's my perspective for next time. I look forward to the Q&A, I think. But can I invite Denise now to the stage to give us an